Press TV headlines. Yemen's opposition rejects the new GCC proposal and demands an outright stepping down of President Saleh. NATO bombs hit Libyan Interior Ministry as the International Criminal Court requests arrest warrants for Libya's ruler Gaddafi. And the U.S. develops sea-based drones it plans to use in Asia. Also, U.S. drones kill nearly a dozen people in Pakistan's tribal areas. A.M. here in the Iranian capital of Tehran. Welcome to Press TV's World News. Yemeni opposition leaders have rejected a new deal being brokered by the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. GCC Secretary General Abdel Latif al-Zayani is in Sana'a to discuss the initiative. Under the new term, Ali Abdullah Saleh should at first sign the deal as the chairman of the ruling party and then sign it as the president. But the opposition insists Saleh should sign it as the president only. The GCC failed to end the standoff last month. The bloc proposed that Saleh step down within 30 days in exchange for immunity from prosecution. But the proposal stalled after Saleh refused to sign the deal on April the 30th. Anti-regime protesters also slammed the plan, accusing neighboring Arab states of meddling in their country's affairs. Los Angeles-based journalist Hisham Talawi says the peaceful transition of power is not possible anywhere in the world, in the Arab world, that is.
You know, in Yemen, it was supposed to have been handled a couple of weeks ago, and Ali Abdullah Saleh was about to actually sign the deal, but something else happened that gave him or bought him more time, which is the was already scheduled raid on the supposedly Osama bin Laden's compound, which very much threw everything back on the drawing board. Yemen is actually causing a problem to the West and to those who are designing these chaos all over the Arab world. I don't believe that the United States will allow Ali Abdullah Saleh to declare war and on anyone, even on the opposition. Right now, the best thing for the United States is for Yemen to be on the, you know, they can't afford right now to lose Ali Abdullah Saleh, but yet they know he has to go. We're not going to see a peaceful transfer of power anywhere in the Arab world. You know, we have a situation in Tunisia and in Egypt, and that situation is not yet over with.
In Yemen, families of those injured and killed by the regime are demanding a clear response from the International Criminal Court and what they call President Saleh's crimes. The families are calling on the court at The Hague in the Netherlands to declare its stance. They say that President Ali Abdullah Saleh has stood by and done nothing as his forces brutally attack and kill anti-government protesters. Meanwhile, protests continue across Yemen. People have taken to the streets demanding the ouster of the president. There was also a march on the U.S. Embassy in the capital, Sana'a. The protesters called on the U.S. to stop supporting President Saleh, and employees of Aden Oil Company have come out on strike. Protesters in the city of Taiz are calling on Saudi Arabia to stand with the popular revolution in Yemen rather than offer incentives to extend Saleh's rule. This while a senior tribal leader has decided to join the popular revolution. Well, in Libya, NATO airstrikes have targeted Muammar Gaddafi's compound in the capital, Tripoli. The airstrikes targeted Tripoli's Bab al-Azizia district. Libya's interior ministry building was badly damaged in the attack. Earlier, several other explosions were heard in the same area. This comes after another NATO airstrike targeted a radar station in the heart of a residential area. Local media also quoted a military source as saying civilian and military sites in Tripoli's Tajura area were targeted, resulting in civilian civilian and military losses. NATO has carried out over 2,500 strike sorties on Libya since late March, killing dozens of civilians. Meanwhile, anti-war protesters have gathered outside Downing Street in London. The protesters were angry over NATO's bombing operation in Libya.
Hear us say, intervention, no way! David Cameron, hear us say, intervention, no way!
To be honest, we don't believe that NATO came to protect civilians, because the first day is they bomb some places like hospitals, and they mentioned that they use it by army. That's not true.
The chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, has requested arrest warrants for Libya's ruler Muammar Gaddafi and some of his henchmen over their brutal crackdown on revolutionaries. However, Libyan opposition says the international authorities must assist anti-Gaddafi forces to arrest him so that he stands trial in Libya rather than international courts. Here's a closer look.
The office was able to gather direct evidence about orders issued by Muammar Gaddafi himself. His second eldest son, Saif al-Islam, is a de facto prime minister. And al-Sanusi, Gaddafi's brother-in-law, is his right-hand man, the executioner.
The ICC chief prosecutor said Gaddafi uses his absolute authority to commit crimes in Libya. Moreno Ocampo said he's also documented meetings held to plan operations against Gaddafi's opponents. Libyans have reacted to the news.
But why they just dropped two or three names, Gaddafi, Saif, and Abdullah Sanusi, which is... they are very, very important members in there, but we would like to see the whole family also. The rest, and the mother Safiya, and Aisha, and Khamis, and...
Many ask why the court has failed to take similar measures with regards to the Saudi-backed crackdowns on popular uprisings in Yemen and Bahrain. The forces loyal to the Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh have been killing people in broad daylight since the revolution against the regime began in mid-February. The Bahraini regime has also bloody hands, using deadly violence to silence dissent. International lawyers have already filed a lawsuit against the ruling Al-Khalifa dynasty over its atrocities against its own citizens in the small Persian Gulf Sheikhdom.
We have met Mr. Dolan, the head of the Office of Investigation, and we expressed to him what is happening in Bahrain. He was very, he felt with this case, he said that he knows that what is happening in Bahrain is something against law.
Reports say the U.S., Britain, and some other Western countries are preventing the Bahrain dossier from reaching the International Criminal Court. And this is yet another indication of double standards practiced by the U.S. and its allies when it comes to human rights violations by their friends in the region and elsewhere.
Rumors of renewed fighting with Gaddafi's forces abound in the Libyan city of Ajdabiya. And as our correspondent reports, the stalemate born of NATO's airstrike aid continues with no end in sight.
In the months since Libya's revolution turned into a full-scale war, the bulk of the opposing armies have been facing each other along this grim stretch of desert road 150 kilometers west of Benghazi. This is the Ajdabiya front. Whenever the revolutionaries advance, they're ambushed by Gaddafi's soldiers and retreat. Whenever Gaddafi's tanks move, they're destroyed by NATO airstrikes. The result? Stalemate. I'm here in Ajdabiya. The front line is in that direction, but we've been prevented from going there. All journalists are now banned from going to the front line in Ajdabiya to film the action or the lack of action there. And it's because of this lack of progress on the Ajdabiya front that NATO military commanders have been pleading to up the scale of the airstrikes. NATO intervention has already altered the course of this war. These tanks were speeding towards Benghazi until the Western alliance stepped in.
No clearer example of the destructive power of NATO airstrikes can be seen here,
where this tank turret was blown from over the road, from the actual tank there, when the NATO rocket struck it, igniting the ammunition within it and killing the soldiers inside instantly.
The military situation is still stable. We are making our building our forces, and we are organizing with NATO because they are still fighting. So this is the decision is for the leaders.
Sure. Revolutionary spokesmen put a positive spin on things. They now say that the whole Ajdabiya front is just a vast decoy, keeping Gaddafi's generals distracted while the revolutionaries advance from Misrata. Certainly, the only revolutionary gains in this war are coming from Misrata. Every day, the hardened veterans of the city's bitter street fighting push closer to Tripoli. Fresh troops are sent by sea to Misrata every week, guarded by NATO ships.
That yes, I'm going with other people. They are volunteers from Benghazi, and we'll go to Misrata to fight there.
Do you think this war will be won from here, from Ajdabiya, or from Misrata?
Yes, from all the sides, from this side and this side, as we get freely.
But unless NATO pursues a more energetic campaign, this stalemate in the empty desert will go on. And with it, Libya's bloody, unfinished revolution. Aris Roussinos, Press TV, Ajdabiya.
The United States is developing a new generation of drones that could be used on aircraft carriers. A U.S. Navy officer has said that some of these drones would be deployed in Asia and would play an integral role in future U.S. operations in the region. Experts say the new generation of drones could be used on any of the 11 U.S. carriers worldwide. Sea-based drones would have a combat radius of over 2,700 kilometers and would remain airborne for 50 to 100 hours. That is, land-based drones are in wide use in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Deadly airstrikes are carried out on an almost daily basis in Pakistan. Well, at least 11 people have been killed in a non-UN-sanctioned U.S. drone strike in Pakistan's northwestern tribal region. Media reports say 8 people were killed as U.S. drones fired 2 missiles at targets in the Miran Shah area of the North Waziristan. 3 others were killed in the second strike, which hit a vehicle in the same region. This has come shortly after Pakistan's parliament called on Washington to stop its strikes. Islamabad has frequently criticized the attacks, calling them unilateral U.S. action and a violation of Pakistan's sovereignty. Meanwhile, the U.S. claims it has been targeting militant schools along the border with Afghanistan. The U.S. carried out over 100 drone attacks inside Pakistan last year, killing more than 1,000 people. While you're watching Press TV's World News, it's time for a recap of our headlines for this hour. Yemen's opposition rejects the new GCC proposal and demands an outright stepping down of President Saleh. NATO bombs hit Libyan Interior Ministry as the International Criminal Court requests arrest warrants for Libya's ruler Gaddafi. The U.S. develops sea-based drones it plans to use in Asia. U.S. drones kill nearly a dozen people in Pakistan's tribal areas. Still to come later on in the broadcast, bushfires in Canada. The details when we return. Welcome back, everybody. Arriving in Pakistan, Chairman of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Senator John Kerry, said relations between Washington and Islamabad have reached a critical moment following the killing of Al-Qaeda leader on Pakistani soil. Our correspondent in Islamabad has the details.
The death of the world's most wanted terrorist, Osama bin Laden, continues to raise costs for the Pakistani establishment. Embarrassed and confused, Pakistan's civilian and military leadership held important talks ahead of the arrival of President Obama's troubleshooter for the AFPAC region, Senator John Kerry.
There is a logical thing that Americans would ask for the for the chase or for the arrest or the killing of Mullah Omar Jalaluddin Haqqani or other prominent Taliban commander which they believe are living in Pakistan.
The discovery of the Al-Qaeda chief living undetected for 5 years close to the capital Islamabad has seriously alarmed the Americans, with Washington insisting that it has evidence that Pakistan has and is complicit in continually sheltering the Afghan Taliban and Al-Qaeda leadership.
We recognize that the Pakistani people and their leaders take their sovereignty seriously. Every nation does. That's why it's important to underscore the extraordinary circumstances behind the mission against bin Laden.
Visiting U.S. Senator Kerry first held a meeting with the Pakistan Army Chief General Kiani. Kerry next held detailed talks with Prime Minister Yousuf Raza Gilani and gave a list of specific demands relating to American suspicions about Pakistan's harboring of militants. His visit comes days after the Pakistan Parliament hurriedly adopted a unanimous resolution condemning the U.S. violation of Pakistan's sovereignty and further demanding an end to U.S. drone strikes.
This road ahead will not be defined by words. It will be defined by actions. With the patience and understanding of Presidents Zardari, Prime Minister Gilani, General Kiani, General Pasha, we've agreed on a specific series of steps that will be implemented immediately in order to get the relationship on track.
With the Americans tightening the screw on Islamabad, the objective of the Obama administration is to finally tighten the noose around Al-Qaeda and the Taliban sheltering in Pakistan ahead of the Afghanistan endgame. The message from Washington once again reads, you are with us or against us. For the Obama administration, patience with Islamabad is fast running out. Pakistan's importance is very much understood. But the latest Osama bin Laden debacle has added notion that Pakistan is increasingly being seen by Washington as a nuisance rather than as a positive force. Adil Sabi, Press TV, Islamabad.
The U.S. Army has signed a contract with an Israeli company to upgrade Apache and Black Hawk helicopters. The Israeli company, TAT Technologies, says contract value may reach as much as $20 million over the next 5 years. The business relationship between TAT and different branches of the U.S. military has existed for several decades. The contract comes amid increasing U.S. military ties with Israel. The U.S. military aid to Israel is to exceed $3 billion this year, up from $2.78 billion in 2010. Last month, the U.S. Congress approved an additional $205 million. This after the Obama administration funded Israel's short-range rocket system known as Iron Dome. While on a visit to Gaza, the EU Commissioner for International Cooperation, Humanitarian Aid and Crisis Response has called on Israel to end its siege of the enclave and asked the UN for assistance.
On a four-day trip to occupied Palestinian territories, the EU Commissioner for International Cooperation, Humanitarian Aid and Crisis Response, Kristalina Georgieva, paid a short three-hour visit to a community center in Esbat Abed Rabbo neighborhood, northern Gaza. The area was entirely destroyed during the Israeli war in 2008. The visiting official met Palestinian children as they talked about their constant fear and how they and their families continue to suffer years of Israeli siege and frequent Israeli attacks. On the latest Israeli attacks on the peaceful demonstrators marking Nakba, or the Day of Catastrophe, a teenager was killed and over 100 Palestinians, most of them teenagers and children, were injured by Israeli gunfire.
Why do we have to suffer? We are people just like you. We want to feel safe and live in peace. Please pass our message.
Everybody, every person deserves to live in peace and without fear. Every person on this planet. And the Palestinian people deserve that as everybody else.
While visiting a UN food distribution center, Georgieva said she came to see on the ground the impact of the blockade on the humanitarian situation and stressed the commitment of the European Union and the United Nations to assist the most vulnerable Palestinians in their daily challenges.
We are here again to renew this call for access so the lives of people in Gaza can be improved.
She concluded her visit by a presser at UNRWA's headquarters in Gaza City. Meanwhile, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, which provides humanitarian assistance to Palestinian refugees in Gaza, called for the immediate, sustained and unconditional opening of Gaza crossings, an easy flow of persons and commercial goods, especially building materials.
The easing of the blockade meant that more consumer goods came into Gaza. It was easier to find various things in the shops, like chocolate and Coca-Cola and so on. But what it was missing and still missing is construction material and raw material for the industrial sector.
International delegations to Gaza come and go. People here in the besieged coastal enclave demand the United Nations to be serious and put a pressure on Israel to end its prolonged siege. Yusuf Al-Hilo, Press TV, Gaza.
Meanwhile, thousands of Syrians have attended the funeral of those killed by Israeli forces in the occupied Golan Heights. Israeli forces opened fire at civilians protesting Nakba Day in the Golan Heights on Sunday. At least a dozen Syrians were killed and many more were injured as a result of the shooting. Those attending the funeral burned Israeli flags and called for the withdrawal of Israel from the occupied Golan Heights. Israel seized the Golan Heights from Syria during the Six-Day War in 1967. Palestinian factions Fatah and Hamas have described as positive the talks in Cairo aimed at hammering out a unity government under a reconciliation deal. Our correspondent has the details.
Palestinian factions Hamas and Fatah met on Monday in Cairo to discuss the implementation of a recently ratified reconciliation agreement. Both groups tackled tangible steps towards the formation of a new national unity government and the issues of detainees in both Gaza and the West Bank.
We discussed the formation of a new government, but the final decision will be made in the Palestinian territories and after consultations with other factions.
Under the deal, Hamas and Fatah have also agreed to work toward the goal of an independent and sovereign Palestinian state with Jerusalem al-Quds as its capital, without a single settler, without giving up even a single inch, and without giving up the right of return of all Palestinian refugees to their homes.
There was full consensus between both factions. We have put forth a specific timetable for the implementation of the reconciliation deal.
Fatah and Hamas explained that the appointment of the new government means implementing 90% of the reconciliation deal, adding that the anticipated government duties in the coming days will entail security issues. Karim Gamaluddin, Press TV, Cairo.
The U.S. Supreme Court has denied requests to hear a lawsuit by CIA torture victims. The lawsuit was filed by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of five men who were tortured at U.S.-run secret prisons. They were kidnapped by the CIA as part of the Bush administration's extraordinary rendition program. The rights group says the apex court has failed once again to give justice to the torture victims and restore the rule of law. The federal government was calling for dismissal of the case, claiming state secrets privilege. In recent years, the U.S. government has arrested state secrecy, has asserted that is state secrecy, to justify the use of torture and other breaches of domestic and international law. While Ecuador's president, Rafael Correa, has scored a major victory in a referendum on his constitutional reform proposals. With over 90% of the votes counted, between 44 and 50% of the Ecuadorians have voted yes to the reforms. Between 39% and 42% of the voters oppose the proposals. Opposition groups have been running an intense campaign against the May 7th referendum. They say the reform will undermine the judicial system and gives the president an absolute power. Well, the chief of the International Monetary Fund, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, has appeared in a court in New York over allegations of sexual assault. The following video contains some flash photography. Strauss-Kahn has pleaded not guilty to the charges brought against him. During the hearing, IMF chief's lawyer asked the court for bail and flight permission, but the judge denied Strauss-Kahn bail and ordered his detention until his trial. Earlier, officials postponed the court proceedings to allow a medical examination to be carried out. The IMF chief was detained at JFK Airport on Saturday night before flying to Paris. New York police have charged him with a sexual assault on a hotel maid. Separately, a French writer is also about to file a complaint alleging the IMF chief sexually assaulted her back in 2002. Elsewhere, the Vatican has issued a new set of directives to prevent church sex abuse scandals. In a letter published on Monday, the Vatican has told its bishops to report priests accused of pedophilia to police and develop guidelines for preventing sex abuse. The letter also gives bishops the exclusive authority to determine abuse allegations. Church pedophile victim groups say the new directives are flawed because they are non-binding. They also say bishops are not qualified to deal with pedophile accusations. This comes a year after thousands of sex abuse revelations in the U.S. and Europe shocked the world. Pope Benedict XVI has apologized to victims and their families on several occasions. Well, finally, in our broadcast in Canada, bushfires have destroyed more than a third of Slave Lake town in northern Alberta. This as dozens of forest fires forced oil companies in Canada's largest energy-producing province to shut down operations. Thousands of residents and workers in several communities known as a center for oil, gas, and forestry have been evacuated. Numerous homes and some public buildings have been destroyed. Authorities have not yet identified the cause of the wildfires. Weather conditions were cited as the major factor in the spread of the dangerous blazes. Well, that's a wrap for this edition of Press TV's World News. Stay with us on the top of the hour. We'll be back with our news in brief. Goodbye for now.